Welcome to the Leeds Church Institute podcast. LCI is a faith-based organisation for lifelong learning. You can find out more about the Leeds Church Institute by visiting lcileeds.org.
So one of the things that we've been doing is really looking at how different faiths or different faith perspectives view creation, climate change, the environment, and so on. And so we're really pleased tonight that Carrier Sim, who's the senior imam at Makkah Mosque, but also has a national profile as a leading Muslim in this country, he's here tonight to speak to us about the Muslim perspective on climate change and the environment. Carrie, thank you very much for coming. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to thank Leeds Church Institute for hosting this session, and also in particular Dr. Helen Reed for inviting me. I'm going to, as Bishop Paul mentioned, going to talk from Islamic perspective, and my beautiful assistant, I don't know whether she's going to be able to keep up with me. Yeah. There are lots of slides, and the purpose isn't to bombard you with this information. It's just really that, and I'm not going to insult your intelligence either by reading out what's in there, but just really, literally, just to give you a perspective as to what's contained in these slides. So I've split the presentation into three parts. Firstly, just talking about how Islam sees creation and the responsibility that's been bestowed upon human beings. And then secondly, some of the principles that have emerged from the life of Prophet Muhammad to help us appreciate the environment. And thirdly, what's happening in the Muslim communities in Britain, and very briefly, internationally, regarding the climate emergency. I think perhaps we might have moved on from climate change to climate emergency as to where we are right now. So, just to give you a very brief understanding of what climate crisis is, and I guess the question that I'm going to be covering to answer the fact that it's one of the greatest moral, social, and environmental issues, it's like, what role can religion play? You know, some may even ask, you know, is religion even relevant? It's a human issue, and it's affecting human beings because it's being caused by human beings. What's the relevance of faith in all of this? I'm sure the people in this room won't be asking that kind of question, but there may be others who might be asking that question. Then, from Islamic perspective, you know, what are the Islamic values that relate to the natural resources management and environmental planning? And then, is it practically possible to derive some lessons from Islamic jurisprudence? So the first principle is this principle of stewardship. You know, the God, you know, mentions in various places in the Quran that how he created the world, he causes a rain to fall on us, and then also he made the sea subject to human beings, and also that we may eat from the creation that God has created. But then after all of this, having given all of the creation to human beings, you know, God says that actually he has appointed stewards as human beings. So in a way, it's not, although the world is at our disposal, the world is there for us to use, but not to abuse, because it's a responsibility as a trustees, and how we discharge that responsibility is something that we are currently being, you know, challenged about internally. And that's something, I guess, this concept of stewardship exists throughout. You know, it's a thread that goes across all traditions and all faiths. And then the second principle is this equilibrium or justice balance that, you know, in essence, Islam says that the state of harmony and natural state, you know, and the balance that's been created by God has to be kept. So one of the verses from the Quran, which is the verse 19 of chapter 15. It says, "And the earth we have spread out, set thereon mountains firm and immovable, and produced therein all kinds of things in due balance." So if God created everything in balance, the question is, are the trustees changing that balance, and how the trustees are perhaps abusing that balance, and what's going to be the consequence of that imbalance? And the Quran talks about that consequence as well. Then it's really this concept of communities on earth. That although we human beings talk about our communities, but is it just the human communities that exist, or are there other groups that of and creation of God? So we have chapter 6, verse 38, in which the Quran talks about, "And there is not an animal that lives on earth, nor a being that flies on its wings, but forms part of communities like you." So in a way, just like you wouldn't like your communities to be affected, to be dismantled, to be destroyed, you know, the question is being posed to human beings, you know, how about other communities? And so perhaps it brings a more personal, you know, rather than just talking about the water, the rain, the earth, it's like making it personal. That, you know, you've got communities, bees got communities, animals got communities, and how are you faring with them? So these are, I guess, the three key issues in terms of how the human beings being trustees, secondly, God having created balance in the world, and thirdly, the existence of communities. And there are some other principles that arise as well. And then God talks about climate crisis in the Quran. And it's very, in a way, quite thought-provoking, but also at the same time, quite challenging verse in the Quran, in chapter 30, verse 41, in which it talks about corruption in land. So he says that this balance has been disturbed because of human choice, you know, because of our choices, which result in overconsumption, overexploitation, and overuse of our resources. And God talks about, you know, I'm going to just read out the verse. "The corruption has appeared in both land and sea." So it talks about both. And then it doesn't just leave it at that. It says, "Because of what people's own hands have brought forth." So in a way, what human beings have done to themselves, that this climate crisis that we're facing. And then, not just leaving it at that, so the Quran goes on to say, "So that they may taste something of what they have done, so that hopefully they will turn back." So that's a challenge to us. The climate crisis is there. God could have prevented that happening, but perhaps we are tasting that in let's say in Yorkshire, in Leeds, you know, whether it's 2019 or 2017, how would we have thought about having floods around Kirkstall, you know, having, or South Yorkshire, or, you know, never thought. And that video is quite, you know, in a bit challenging, that how you would have never thought that, you know, the in a way, you think of the so-called third world, things happening like that, people's crops being, you know, destroyed. It's happening right amongst us. But the hope is there, that in a way, that we can turn it back. You know, we can turn the, you know, turn things round. And it's really great to see that that's what we're talking about tonight and what's happening around the world. There's at least more awareness. And so I wouldn't go into huge detail about what the corruption is and how it's been caused. But let's move on to then, in a way, that we Muslims believe that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was a strong proponent of sustainable use and cultivation of land and water, proper treatment of animals, plants and birds, and equal rights of users. So effectively talking about this whole concept of being steward. And how he did that, he did by four principles. You know, we will add one to those principles there. And so starting off with, in a way, sustainable use of land. You know, land is something that's real, that's tangible, that we can feel. So, you know, the Prophet, you know, and this is quite unique, that he talks about the earth has been created for me as a mosque and as a means of purification. Now, making it personal, that how, as a person of faith, we all value and cherish our places of worship. So saying, just like you treat your mosque as sacred, as something that belongs to God, something that has a unique status in your mind, God has created the whole earth a mosque. So looking at it from that perspective, and so therefore you should treat it with the same respect, dignity, and also give that sacredness attachment to the whole earth. And then so Prophet Muhammad not only encouraged the sustainable use of fertile lands, he also told his followers for the benefits, of making unused land productive, planting a tree, sowing a seed, and irrigating dry land. You know, these were all not only useful for human use, but linking it to an act of worship. If you do all of that, then that will be an act of worship for you. Now imagine, like, more than 1400 years ago in a desert. We're not talking about, you know, somewhere where there was already a lot of trees and plantation. You know, in Saudi Arabia, desert, lack of water, lack of greenery. And in that climate, he's actually talking about green issues. And saying that if you do that, cultivate your land, if you plant tree, etc., you know, that will be a charitable gift from you and present it to God, and as a result you will get the reward for it. So, you know, one of the traditions, hadith, talks about whoever brings dead land to life, that is, in terms of land, that cultivates waste land, for him is a reward therein. So not just saying you perhaps you might do that, you know, to your own garden or to your own land, but it's like thinking about it, that it's like doing it for the sake of God, and as a result you will not only benefit in this world but also they'll be reward for it. And then so this is linked to the first principle, the use of land and sustainable use of land, that he came up with these two concepts. One is himma and the other one is, you know, haram, effectively talking about, like, encouraging his community to do things and certain things which will cultivate the sustainable use of land, and also preventing them from doing other things. So, for instance, the area around water wells and water sources were protected, because obviously, you know, the impact it has in terms of keeping that water in those wells. Like, for instance, you know, I've seen, I'm sure a lot of people have seen in here as well, in terms of in parts of Africa, you dig a well, you go really deep, but actually because the land around the well hasn't been sustained, as a result, the water dries up in those wells. You know, even though, you know, it's not the water is still there, but because the way the land around the water is used, it affects that. So just talking about the concepts that the Prophet Muhammad propounded around that. The second concept is conservation. The first one being sustainable use of land, and second one, conservation. And in particular, so he talks about conservation of water. And there's a very beautiful example that Prophet Muhammad passed by a companion, and he was performing ablution. So wudu, those of you who know that Muslims, you know, they have to perform, they have to wash themselves, perform wudu, ablution, before they pray. So prayer is seen as one of the supreme acts of worship, a very noble cause. And the follower, the companion of the Prophet, is using water excessively to prepare himself for this noble cause. And the Prophet asked the question, what's this squandering of water that you're doing? And then the one who's performing ablution, he asks, you know, saying, is this squandering of water? Is this wasting water, even though I'm preparing myself for a noble cause? You know, so he's really reinforcing, the Prophet is really reinforcing that point, that even when you have excess of water, i.e. your resources are not, you know, are plenty, and you are even doing in your mind a very noble cause, still you have to be vigilant about the resources that you have at your disposal. And perhaps if you just focus on that, then in terms of how right now, perhaps, you know, it isn't that there isn't enough in the world for everyone's use, but there's definitely enough in the world for everyone's abuse. And that brings us to perhaps the next principle, which is moderation versus extravagance. So what Prophet Muhammad in that second principle was teaching us was about this conservation. And he's really, you know, Islam focuses huge, you know, there's ample focus on this moderation. So I've just quoted a couple of statements. The first one being Prophet Muhammad saying that a believer is not he who eats his fill while his neighbors are hungry. You know, while his neighbor is hungry. So in a way, you don't really think about that. But perhaps if we all reflected upon that, you know, just, you know, starting with food, not even whether third pair of shoe is a luxury or is something that's needed. You know, it's all of those things. Now, that might sound drastic, you know, but just thinking along those lines and how the impact it will have. So when we talk about climate crisis, climate emergency, you know, it sounds like such a huge task. You know, who's going to resolve it? But perhaps it's about making changes in our own lifestyles, what we eat, what we drink, what we wear. Where does it come from? How do we make a difference in our own lives? And then that will build on the momentum. So obviously I've mentioned a verse from the Quran there as well. And waste not by excess, for Allah doesn't like those who waste. And then finally, the fourth principle is actively. So the first ones were, you know, the first two were about preserving. You know, the third one, extravagance versus moderation, is perhaps balancing, and then actively promoting, you know, green issues, saying planting, and linking it to one's faith. So it's not, in a way, for Muslims, climate change or talking about green issues isn't a PR issue, isn't something that's fashionable, but rather it's linked to the faith. You know, and the Quran and the traditions of the Prophet very much talk about, when they use examples from the environment rather than other examples. So, you know, just this one particular hadith which is mentioned in Bukhari, which is the second most important authenticated source for Muslims after the Quran. So the Prophet Muhammad, he talks about three things that, you know, never does a Muslim plant a tree or sow a crop, that three things happen. You know, either a bird benefits from it, or a human being benefits from it, or, you know, the literal translation of beast, you know, eats from it, or let's say wildlife benefits from it. So either human beings or wildlife or birds, any of those creation of God benefit from it, you may not see that benefit, but actually, you know, it'll be charity from you. But this other hadith is quite interesting, which talks about that effectively, that even if the hour, the doomsday was to come, yeah, and you are planting a tree. Now, that's quite remarkable, that using that example, rather than actually saying that you were praying, you were helping somebody, you were giving charity, you were fasting, you know, complete that. It gives the example of, let's say, you know, we all, I guess, the people of faith know in terms of doomsday, you know, in the imagery that we have in mind. And Prophet Muhammad links that imagery to planting a tree, saying, even if that was here, the hour, still carry on planting that tree. You know, it's really encouraging and homing in that point, instilling that point in us, that how important it is to discharge that responsibility of being a steward. That takes me to the third part of the presentation. So we've talked about how the Quran talks about, in terms of, you know, that human beings are trustees, then the principles that propounded by Prophet Muhammad, and how by his own example he showed that how important it is for Muslims to be conscious of the planet that they are on. Not because, you know, someone we say, well, if we don't preserve the planet, then, you know, there won't be a planet. You know, the planet will still be here. It's more like human beings will not be here, and that's how we need to think about it. You know, it's like that. You know, that in terms of it's our own existence that is at stake, and how we do that. So there've been lots of, I guess, just like declarations in various communities. You know, there've been Istanbul Declaration. The Islamic UN Declaration at the Council as well. So lots of internationally at a high level things happening. But what are things happening in this country? So for the first time, we have an eco-friendly mosque in Cambridge. That's the purpose-built mosque. That's something that's happened recently, opened earlier this year. Then also there are 25 mosques, mainly from Sultan Bawud Trust. There are they have become sustainable and eco-friendly mosques, and other mosques are on a journey. Obviously, we all appreciate that in terms of where the priorities lie, that it's expensive to maintain all of that, and so something that Muslims are trying to do, and is some of it that we're using in terms of examples, what Church of England has done in terms of how it's rolled out a national program for churches to be more eco-friendly, to be more environmentally conscious, and make their institutions more sustainable. So some of the other initiatives that are happening in the mosque is like banning plastic or use of disposable materials. So rather than disposable, using degradable cutlery and other things. And so in particular, during Ramadan, when, every mosque and every night, perhaps, between 200 to 300 disposable products are being used, how can we make it more eco-friendly? And then just something about in terms of in Leeds earlier. So conversations are taking place. So in Leeds earlier this year, with Minab and Peace Matters, we held a round table around, just raising awareness. I think, this is what we're doing. And then finally, just recently, you might have come across this at Times Now, where around 15,000 people were expected to, turn out and they, have a conversation with MPs and also try to lobby MPs. And I guess now I was in Parliament yesterday, and they were talking about how, some people were talking about how this election shouldn't be about Brexit, it should be about climate. But it's up to us in terms of how we make that change, how we make that, how we hold others to account and raise awareness about it. This walk of witness, just in terms of the former Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rowan William, and also other faith leaders, important people, and then just little me there as well, just trying to have that conversation. It's not that young guy, little one. And then finally, we just had recently declaration in the UK, so from Minar, which is Mosque and Imams National Advisory Board. It's a bit mouthful, brief, it's about Minar. And Bawud Trust and IFIS Eco Islam made a declaration about moving from fossil fuels to renewable energy, and that's something that happened in the largest Muslim organization in America did it at the same time. So momentum is picking up, and it's how we make that change that's really important. So finally, Islamic worldview calls to make a transition to a sustainable society and economy by adopting responsible development and respecting sustainability principles. This change requires a shift in norms and practices. I think that's the basic thing in terms of it's not going to be laws that are going to make a difference, and it's not going to be all about what the international community does. That's really important, because without them, change will not happen. But it's what a great thing it would be that religious leadership, academic and scientists, data and momentum, together with the political leadership, making that difference to save not only just the planet but human existence. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast from the Leeds Church Institute. If you'd like to know more about the Leeds Church Institute, visit lcileeds.org.